Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Today, we have a summary of Powerful JRE. In this episode, Joe Rogan engages in a fascinating conversation with a guest who shares their extraordinary experiences with marathon running, including a remarkable 53-mile race from Athens to Sparta. The discussion delves into the challenges and triumphs of long-distance running, revealing insights into the mindset required for such feats. Remember to follow us on X and Instagram and on our website, podsummarizer.xyz. And now, let's begin.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
Oh, yep.
All right. Surreal.
Dude, you've only been here for 20 minutes. You already freaked me out.
Just freaked out.
And I'm freaked out by the fact that you're the first guy that's ever come here that ran a marathon before you got here.
You know, wanted to clear my mind. It's a big day.
How long did it take you to run it?
You got to check online. I don't know. I think it was like 3 hours, 25 minutes, 3:30, something like that.
Wow, that's a good time for
went
a casual.
Went kind of southeast, thunderstorming in Austin, Texas, and then looped around, went back, got some work done. I always do phone calls while I'm running.
How often do you run? You said you ran 27 miles this morning?
I think so. I don't know. I turned around. I got it done. I need to get ready for this shower. But yeah.
Is that a normal thing for you to do?
Very normal.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a lot of distance, man.
You know, there was like a sweet spot pre having as many kids and more family constraints and work. And now life is busy. But where I do 20 miles every day.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, what's the longest you've run?
You do 153 miles.
Wow. How long did it take you to do that?
33 hours. Spartathlon in Greece. Epic.
It's
epic.
In Greece?
Oh, it's crazy, man. You run from Athens to Sparta. This race is amazing. You ever seen the movie 300 with Gerard Butler?
Sure.
So that's the story. A couple of crazy dudes in the 80s decided that they're going to recreate where he ran, Pheidippides, to deliver the message. Because in that movie, you remember 300 Spartans defended against the Persian masses, and they frame it as the difference between us having civilization and not. Had those 300 guys not died while they assembled an army and he delivered that message to King Leonidas? So when you finish this race, if you finish, it's one of the hardest races in the world. Like, there's Badwater, you know, Goggins, mutual buddy of ours. But there's races they say are the hardest. This one kicked my butt.
Is it because of the elevation? What is it?
It's because Europe does not believe in ice, so there's nothing cold for the first 50 miles. You're hot, and then the cutoffs are much stricter. So at 50 miles, you have to be done. You got to fact check this, but 9 or 10 hours. So you have to finish 153 miles in under 36 hours. You need to be running at all times. You can't walk for 2 hours and start throwing up. Which I was puking for 8 hours straight the first time I did it. Still, excuses. This is me just bitching. I should have finished that year. I wasn't mentally tough. But 100% that year, I just didn't have it mentally. And the next year, I came back ready to die. I was like, I'm going to finish this race. Yeah. There was a guy in the middle of the night, I won't kid you, who looked at me and he says to me, there it is. He goes to me with like crazy eyes. And I've already given up in my mind. You know, like... They call it DNFing, did not finish in ultras. I already wrote the speech of like, I'm going to tell my friends I learned from this, you know, all that stuff of like, I already gave up in my mind. And I saw this guy at mile, I don't know, like 72, middle of the night, who looks at me with these crazy eyes. I'll never forget his looks, crazy eyes like that, but 100 times more, and goes, you're going to give up? He goes, if you can't run, you walk. You can't walk, you crawl. You never, ever. And I was like, yo, man. This guy needs to chill out right now because I've already quit in my mind. But I channeled that guy when I came back the next year. And it was that. I'm going to the hospital and you're not putting IV. I'm going to finish this race. And I came back the next year mentally like, there's no way I'm not finishing.
Did you do anything different in preparation?
Listen,
it's
all mental. Anyone who tells you otherwise, physical is meaningless at that point. Physical is meaningless in most points, to be honest. There were guys who I saw when I quit. It was, you know, 2 a.m. who were slower than me, they were older than me, every objective measure I should have beat them, but they mentally finished. The next morning I got a night's sleep, woke up, watched them, ate lunch, and saw them finish. I was like, I was crying. I couldn't believe the emotions of this guy finished who was 2 hours behind me when I quit. And I learned that day it's mental, 100%. The mindset is when you get there, you know if you're finishing at the start.
So did it haunt you that you didn't finish?
Oh, haunted me every day.
Isn't that crazy?
Haunted.
Like, what you did was really hard, but you
didn't...
No,
that's bullshit hard. No. It was, I should have finished.
How far did you get?
I got halfway.
So that's pretty hard.
No, I got
75 miles?
I quit when it was convenient because I got to an aid station and I'm like, oh, you know, I got 30 minutes on the... I already decided in my mind I was quitting.
Right.
Right? People always say, can I read minds? I can't read minds. I read people.
Okay.
This envelope, if they can't see it and they're listening, your logo sealed.
Right.
This is your future.
My future?
This is your future. I'm not psychic. I'm not supernatural, but I assure you, I want you to hold this from now until the end of the episode.
Okay.
That's when we open it.
I don't even know if I want to know my future.
No, no. This is all good stuff. Live to 120. Joe's going to be a two-term president. You know.
Shut the fuck up. That's not good. I don't want that job.
You take it before we even start.
Okay.
And at the end, we open it. So nobody skips this episode. You buckle up for the ending.
I'm here. People will just fast forward.
They'll fast forward. They'll miss all the good stuff in the middle.
The quitters.
The quitters. The people who did not finish Spartathlon.
That's insanely impressive, though, that you run that much. When did you start doing this?
My sister ran a marathon. She's 8 years older. I have twin sisters. And do you remember when marathoning became, like, commonplace?
She's like, I can't believe you didn't shout me out. Sorry, sweetie.
Well played.
Yeah, she's the best.
They all are, right? So my sister ran it, and everyone at a certain point, marathoning became like a thing. Do you remember when Oprah ran one? And then everyone's like, I'm running a marathon.
I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, but there was like a moment where the zeitgeist, everyone started running marathons. This was before
that. I believe you.
Yeah.
But I wasn't tuned into that frequency.
When my sister said she's running 26.2 miles, if she had told me, this is not that she's not fit. She was like a collegiate D1 athlete, swimmer. I'm like, if she had said I'm going to the moon, it would have been equal of like, what do you mean you're running a marathon? And so when she did it, I immediately that day signed up for a marathon just to be like, no, screw that. I'm not doing this.
Right.
And I was working on Wall Street. I was kind of getting fat and lazy, happy hours. And I go, this is all there is. Like, I'm making money. Don't get me wrong. I'm blessed. But I got to have something that fires me up. That's my instinct. And so I signed up for a marathon.
What year was this?
2004.
Okay.
And then I did one, Philly Marathon, you know, the Rocky, the whole thing. Da-da-da. And at mile 23, I stop and I'm like crying. Again, this is a common theme. I've cried like twice in my life. My wife will say, but I was wrecked. I was going to quit. I see two dudes walking because I'm going decently fast at this point. I've trained terribly. I see two dudes walking about 100 yards ahead of me. And I go, misery loves company. I'm going to walk up and I'm going to catch them. But they're walking the same speed as me. So I decide, screw it. I'm going to run to them. I run. I get about halfway there.
Having navigated the complexities of early independence and the art of persuasion, the conversation shifts to the intriguing world of UFC, where fights and commentary intertwine in unexpected ways.
Right.
So I didn't pick it.
That's even better, isn't it? Had you picked it, I could have looked this up. That's actually, to me, more of a gold standard.
No, because you could get it from the bank, because the bank is the one that fucking sent it to me.
If I have broken into your bank account, there are bigger things at play than this podcast, I feel.
I don't keep a lot of money in that account.
Watch this. How many UFC fights do you think you've seen in person or commentated?
Boy, I don't even know. I really don't know.
Well, what UFC number are we on?
UFC 2000, what is it? 200 and 234 or something? What is it at now? 235 is the next one.
But each fight has an undercard. You got you got the title fight.
Sometimes
you got
as many as 15 fights.
Right?
Yeah, or as few.
Three. 316.
What is it?
316.
UFC 316 is now?
One coming up on June 7th.
What did I say? Two?
Yeah, I was thinking two for a second. Why
did
I
say
didn't
two?
We have 300 already?
Oh, you know what I'm thinking? I'm confusing podcast numbers. We're in the 2000s.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So that's
you're
what it is.
A lot of podcasts.
UFC, yeah. So it's UFC 3 what?
316.
316.
With 10 fights per.
So I haven't 12. Been on all of those cards, but I started commentary-wise in 2021. And just as a post-fight interviewer in 97. So 97, I did it for 2 years, not as many shows. And then from 2001, I used to do 20 a year. I used to do a lot. I was doing most of them. I would say thousands of fights.
Thousands, right?
So probably.
Watch this, because I love that. I like the way you think, and I like that you're skeptical, because I'm a huge skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always the one calling BS on this,
okay.
Right? That's how I started doing it. If you think through all your fights and you go back in time, and they need to know this is spontaneous, this is impulsive. You have not thought of this before this moment, have you?
Right.
I want you to stop and start thinking of different fighters. past or present.
Mm-hmm.
Could be somebody huge, could be a legendary figure, could be somebody more under the radar.
Okay.
Maybe you've had them on the podcast, maybe you haven't. You said 2020, you go, I said that, I would have said that no matter what. Let someone jump into your mind right now that you've definitely seen one of his, I guess, or her fights.
Okay.
Bam. I'm not guessing it. I don't care. Okay. Tell us. Was it a specific fight you saw this person in, or are you just seeing the fighter?
Just seeing the fighter.
No, no. Go to a specific fight of that person. Try to, like, contextualize it. Or change to a different fighter right now if you feel like you need to.
Maybe. Let me think.
See, Joe's not going to want to change. But now that I said that.
I'm trying to get it crafty.
Yeah, get crafty.
I'm trying to move along here. Are you going to come up with the name of the
fight? Not coming up with anything. Okay. I want to see how your mind worked. I'm only doing this because you told me I would have said 2020 no matter what. You think that you had the thought regardless of what I did. And I want you to see that there's causality. Boom. Do it now. Who just came into your head?
Okay.
Tell us. I'm not guessing.
Anderson Silva.
Anderson Silva. Legendary, right?
Yes.
Did he win or lose that fight?
He won.
He won that fight.
Yes.
How many people did you go to? So funny you said Anderson Silva. Legendary guy. How many people did you think of before you landed on him?
Oh, I don't know. I would, scrolled a Rolodex. They just all went flying through my mind.
Just give me a guess. How many times?
Dozens.
Dozens?
Yeah, they just all went flying through my head.
Dozens?
Yeah.
If you had to put a number on it, and you actually count them, how many do you think you went through? Guess.
I mean, let's be conservative and say like 14. Let's like not even say dozens.
He was
say.
The 14th fighter that popped in your head.
No, he was in there. He was in the mix.
He was in the mix.
I was just trying to figure out which one to pick. I was going to get one with a crafty Russian name.
Should have. <it's> one okay. of those Chechens.
Yeah.
All right, no. 14 people went through your head, Anderson Silva. Do you think that at some point in this week, you heard something that got that in the back of your head that made you say that now? Do you think there's any way that that could have happened?
No, I don't believe so.
You don't,
no.
Right?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
I've just been a huge fan of his forever. I don't think something popped up that made me think
All
about
right.
him.
I'm just curious.
Okay.
No trick. I'm just curious okay. why that happened.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
Where are you going with this? Where are you going with this?
I don't know where I'm going.
You don't know?
I do.
Okay.
But I'm not telling you yet.
Oh, okay.
No, Joe's flummoxed. He's like, where do we go?
No, I mean, yeah. like, I don't know why you asked me the question if you don't have a resolution.
Oh, I'm not guessing it. I wanted to see where you thought of why it came to your mind. There will be a reason. I don't want to explain it yet,
oh,
but you'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
There'll be a reason why it came
I
into
think
my
so.
Mind?
I think so.
Really?
I think there is, yeah.
What's the reason?
Well, I don't want to tell you yet. I'm selling
why?
The sizzle, not the steak.
So these techniques that you use, are these ones that you've invented or are these
a
ones?
A lot of them.
That, a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how did you invent them?
You
how
know
did
what?
They come to you?
I think my favorite form of entertainment by far is stand-up comedy. Like straight up, I'm a fanboy of comedians. Like not the people that do what I do because that's, I just love watching how you can take any premise and stuff that's not funny, right? The people that really go, you know, you just like Andrew Schultz, Life, did you watch his?
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it?
No.
So how do you take infertility, right? And just, it's not really a very funny subject and make it incredible. One
no,
of the best
he's
specials.
Amazing.
He's so
amazing.
Good. So good. And so I like the fact that how you invent that. So I design with an end in sight. I say, what do I want people to remember about what I do?
Mm.
Because I'm not really in the business of fooling you, honestly, and like entertaining you. All of those are side effects. What do I think I do for a living? I create memorable moments, which is very definable because if you go see a movie, let's say you see a popcorn flick. You walk out of the movie theater, 10 minutes, like, what happened in the movie? Like, I don't know. It was fun. I don't know. That to me is 100% like the death of my show. You leave and you will remember things, hopefully for years to come. And that's because I can rework your memory. That's really a lot of the techniques I do. People think that your memory is infallible. That what you see is some sort of blueprint, like a video,
mm-hmm.
and it's not. It has to do with how you feel in the moment, the emotions, the things you can position, the same way hypnosis works. So I can kind of engineer memories in a certain way, the way people remember things, the way they think, and create those moments that people talk about, hopefully for years, and that's what's been, you know, I guess that's what's been the driver of my business and what's helped lead to my success.
Engineering memories.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first started getting into mentalism, is that the word to use
yeah,
for it?
Yeah.
Mentalism?
Yeah.
You're a mentalist, but do you call it mentalism?
I guess so, yeah, mentalism.
Did you know that, or is it something that...
No. I learned it. I learned certain things, and I observed them, and I didn't understand why they happened. You ever have that? You ever have a moment in a set where you say something that you didn't think was funny, but got a huge laugh?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that, or do you always know?
Yeah, because
it's usually not the punch. It's like, I didn't know that would be funny right then.
Oftentimes with a new bit, yeah.
You don't
exactly know where it's funny.
Where the beats are. What was the word I said in this way? What was that inflection point? So when I was doing restaurants, I had this trick where I would have somebody pick a card out of a deck of cards. Right? They would put the card back in the deck. They sign it with their name. And I used to do this at a bunch of restaurants. They would shuffle up the deck. I give them a rubber band. I say, rubber band that bad boy.
Having navigated the nuances of unexpected humor in performances, the discussion shifts to the essential structure of impactful acts, where clarity and emotional engagement become paramount in captivating an audience.
Performances.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, I structure it the same way I think anybody would. I want to go out the gate very strong. I want to very instantly establish credibility. Who am I? What do I do? Am I any good at it? And why should you be paying attention to me? Because all those questions off the jump is like, who the hell cares? I always go into it with, who cares what you can do? You're special. I don't care. I like the thought of, I'm going to prove to you that this is something incredible and that it's something you're interested in emotionally. Right? If I told you just make a random number up, who cares? But now it's going to haunt you that that's your freaking ATM pin code. So I prefer that. So I do something very quick that freaks you out. And then every single thing needs to have a very clear premise. Like I call it clarity of effect. I don't like a trick where I'm like, get a book, get a Rubik's Cube, get the, like, it's too confusing. You need to be able to explain to a 6-year-old what I did in one sentence for it to be memorable. That's the key. The best things you've ever seen are typically stuff you can describe in one, max, 2 sentences. And for TV, it's the same exact thing, but I always like to do new stuff. So I've done a lot of TV appearances, and I always structure it based on who's watching. So rather than it being about me, and me saying, oh, look what I can do, and look how cool this is, right? You do a card trick. Again, I'm not saying that's not amazing, but the card trick's about you. Typically, if I'm on ESPN and I've, you know, done hundreds of millions of views doing stuff for football players, you're watching this, you're a football fan, you're like, who cares about this guy? I'm going to do stuff about football players and about what interests you if you're a fan. I don't know if you've ever seen, I did a clip with Joe Burrow from the Bengals where I said, Joe, I ever spoken to you a word in my life? He goes, no. Like, I honestly, the funny thing about that is I wasn't even supposed to use him in the show. They told me he's shy. You don't want to, like, don't use him in the show. And they said, if you can't avoid him. And I got in there, I tried to rile up the gang, you know, kind of peer pressure. And I'm like, should we get Joe in here? And they're like, yeah, get him up. Haven't spoken a word to this guy in my life. But Joe stands up, doesn't know me from anyone. And I say, every wide receiver and tight end in the room, stand up. And I go, what if I could tell you who you're going to throw that ball to? What's that worth? Right? That's the holy grail. If you're in football, I go, catch the ball, quarterback. I go, look at everyone in this room and now look at me. And I wrote on a huge, huge thing, showed the camera, throw it to anybody you want. Throws it, got the first one right. I go, let's do it again. I go, throw it to anyone you want. He goes, anyone? I go, anyone. Throws it, got the second one right. Everyone's freaking out. I go, one last play. Two is luck. And I write, fakes to Jamar. You can watch the clip. It's most viral thing I've ever done. And he fakes it to Jamar, turns around, throws it to another guy. Nailed it exactly. And you just see his face. And so I was thinking about how I would do that for 2 years. 2 years of thinking of every single way that could work, not work, go wrong. Everything about it was, you know, he thought I went in the room and it's so simple. That was 2 years of me thinking about it during every run.
So for 2 years, you knew you were going to do this, or you knew that you were...
I started with the end. You asked me the same way. I don't know how you like form a set, but you asked me, how do I design? I was designing with the story people would tell. And so people that don't know who I am, don't know anything, go, yo, we saw this guy. Did you see this guy? He just told Joe Burrow to throw the ball to any people. Throws it, gets it right. Throws it. Like, the story is, I told the quarterback anybody he would throw the ball to.
So it was any quarterback. It wasn't Joe Burrow in your head.
Well, I didn't know who it would be.
But he said you could do it for 2 years. Well, so for 2 years, you thought you were going to be on ESPN and with a quarterback?
Well, no. So he was the second season. So when I first started it, I start brainstorming. I'm like, I can't control what thoughts come in. I'm constantly thinking about what I'm going to do. And I just do notes apps. I write stuff down in the shower. Like, when I run is when I come up with stuff, and in the shower. Sometimes on airplanes, but I sleep on planes. But that's when it hits me.
Hmm.
Like, where are your bursts? You must have, like, where are you getting material?
Mostly late at night, right? Yeah, but sometimes driving.
Driving? You don't do phone calls or anything?
I mean, phone calls, I'm usually concentrated on talking to people.
Yeah.
They're not the times where ideas come to me. A lot of times it's driving with no music on.
Wow. Yeah. I'm never in the car by myself, ever.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm.
Family. But, yeah.
Five kids.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Driving to work,
yep.
You know, usually that's when it comes to me.
Yeah. And I'm in New York City, so
or
there's
sauna,
no...
Sauna.
Sauna's good, because you can't be on electronics.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, the phones are a killer. The phones, like, you zap any creativity or boredom. You need boredom.
Yeah, you do need boredom. Yeah, you need boredom for ideas to come to you, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the problem, essentially, with social media. It's like it's a boredom... It you are still bored, but you are occupied.
Right. You don't get to sit with it.
Yeah.
Which I think is key, because mm-hmm. that's when... they kind of fire off.
Yep.
And I think that's, you know, not to get into it, but like so many kids now have no way to deal with boredom.
Yep.
Like it's like panic. I got to get my phone. I got to, you know, that whole feeling of, I wish there was a way to do that.
Yeah, they're just completely unaccustomed to not being constantly entertained.
Right.
And even entertained by nonsense. It's not even really entertaining. It's just distracting.
Yeah.
Which is a big part of it.
Yeah.
So you sat out for 2 years prepping this thing.
No, like, I didn't set out. I was just always thinking. It's like a...
Right. I mean, but, you know, you set out, I should say. Set out in your mind. You had this idea in your head for 2 years.
How do I do it?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
How do you do it?
That's that was the question, because I didn't know how to do it at first.
How did you do it?
That's a million-dollar question, right? I wouldn't be in business if everybody knew. That's kind of...
Well, okay, even better. How did you learn how to do this kind of thing?
So I started with books... And then there's some videos, but it's a very esoteric.
What do the books tell you that's applicable?
They give you a series of foundational things. Like, right, almost everybody who becomes a mentalist starts a magician. It's kind of like if you're a doctor, you got to be a doctor before you become a plastic surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this core set of skills that you utilize to know how to fool people, right? To know how people think.
Okay.
Right? Think about you. If I taught you a card trick right now, there's always a level of deception. We go, oh, that's
sleight of hand.
Well, not even, there's tricks called self-working tricks where you don't need to do any sleight of hand.
Okay.
They work by themselves as long as you follow the instructions, like IKEA furniture, like step one, step two, step three. As long
Got
as you
it.
Can work people in a certain way to do the right things versus somebody being like, I'm not doing that. You're like, oh, shit, what do I do right now, right? You have mm-hmm. to know how to finesse people. You have to influence people effectively. And so... that same stuff within magic almost always applies to props. You need a thing to do the trick.
Okay.
Now, it could be a regular deck of cards, in which case you're learning sleights, but also there's gimmicks, right? There's tricks you can buy at stores, which when I was a kid, I'm like, oh, teenager, I'm like, get me the next gimmick. But then to get better, you start being able to do stuff impromptu, right? That's when you kind of hit another level where I don't need stuff. I can do stuff with anything. You know, I could do stuff. It's like a good story for my book that I'm writing right now. But it's like where I just needed anything around.
Having navigated the intricacies of influence and improvisation in magic, the conversation shifts to the vital importance of physical movement as we delve into the profound effects of exercise on mental health.
You know, there's a lot of stuff that you can do that's fun, that's exercise. But man, you should exercise. You know,
you got to move your body.
You got to move your body.
Again, I don't want to speak out of turn like medical, but they've shown over and over that exercise is just, it's almost as effective in certain regards and like just being a certain level of healthiness than antidepressants.
No, more effective.
More effective.
More effective.
It's unbelievable.
Statistically, clinically, more effective.
More effective.
Yeah. Because it's, of course it is. Of course it is. Like, this is the reason why people are so filled with anxieties, because your body has certain physical requirements.
Right.
Your body was designed to fight off predators and to run away from enemies and to hunt and gather food. That's the same DNA as people that lived tens of thousands of years ago, courses through your body. That's, or it's the fabric of your body. That's you.
Right.
You, like, you can't deny that, and there's a reason why this sedentary sort of generation that we're experiencing right now because of phones and tablets and all the sitting in front of screens all the time is the most depressed.
Right. No, for sure. Anxious too. Like the Jonathan Haidon, like it's,
yeah,
it's wild, the correlation, and it's just so clear cut. But yeah, social media is very, it's one of those things. There's some benefits, but man, oh man, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. So
no.
You gotta find the right way to do it.
There's some benefits in that there's a lot of inspiration.
I agree.
You know, and also information. You know, I'm not completely off of social media. I tap anywhere, but I've radically reduced it over the last month or so. And in doing that, it's really been much, much nicer. Like, life is way easier. But occasionally I'll find something really interesting on social media. So it's like, boy, I don't want to not know that. I don't want to not, like, find out about some new scientific breakthrough or some new thing that's going on. One of the things that I found that helps me, though, is instead of social media, I just have a bunch of stuff that I curate in my Google News app. And so I'll just, like, find, like, any sort of scientific breakthrough or some weird discovery or a lot of really interesting things about ancient civilizations. I just have that stuff curated, so it just shows up on my feed.
Where do you get that on your phone?
Right? Yeah, it's just the Google News app. It's great because it's like that way I can find stuff out without having to go and just hopefully randomly run into it on X or on Instagram.
Right.
You know? That's helped. That helps a lot.
Terrible with X. A lot of my friends get news on X. I'm just like, oh.
It's too much negativity.
It's all a lot of negativity. And for Instagram for years, I started realizing that it just, like a compare and despair is one of, do you know that? Like where I'm like, why am I getting off of this and feeling worse than I did getting on it? And so I really had to flip a switch in my brain to I got rid of that. Anything that I don't like, I don't show, and I stop focusing on what I don't have, and what I focus on what I do have. And so
so did you like used to go to it and you see someone with a giant house and a Lamborghini or something like that? Like, was it material possessions?
It wasn't material. It was I need to use, so I don't look at people and hope poorly upon them. I look more at it and say, I'm not doing enough. So it's like a inferior. You're always going to be lesser than, right? You're always going to be, someone's going to be younger, richer, smarter, like every. But in my case, it was more of, I wanted to achieve a level of success and just seeing other people in my field or other fields. And I felt like I'm not doing enough. Somewhat driven, ambitious. So I'm like,
right.
I'm just not doing enough right now. And it's that constant feeling of I'm not doing enough doesn't drive you. It would be better to see, look at them. I'm so happy for them. I'm going to do that too. Like it should be a positive, uplifting thing. And it's a flip in your brain. It's like multiplying -1 times -1 and much more of a inflection point of gratitude. Like do you know Jay Shetty? I don't know, podcaster, really good dude.
I've definitely heard of him.
Met him last year and he told me something very stuck with me for the last year, which is million thoughts a day. We're on social media. We're all this, that. He goes, the only two thoughts, you can't control them all, but try to control two thoughts each day. The first one when you wake up and the last one when you go to sleep. It's that easy. Those two, just try to have the first thing you wake up be one, and before you go to bed, just have one last thought.
Okay.
And they're always, for me, it's like, yo, every day alive is a blessing. Like I literally believe that in my core. I don't know what's gonna happen tomorrow. Like a parent in my school just passed away recently, shattered. Like young kids, cancer, I've known a few people. And you see that and you're like, no, that's for real though. You don't know what will happen tomorrow.
Right.
So I've hit the lottery. Like I'm blessed beyond measure. Wife, way out of my league. Smart, gorgeous, sharp as a whip. 5 beautiful kids. Like I try to focus on everything I have and never on what I don't have. I get to do what I love for a living. Like my mindset is completely evolved of why would I think of what people don't? And everybody, if you're alive, you should be happy. You do not know what tomorrow will be. And I know that's all like new agey, whatever, but that's, you don't know when your clock's up.
We were just talking about that in the green room last night at the comedy club about the problem with gratitude is that too many people have co-opted it.
Right.
And really annoying people.
Annoying.
Annoying, like wooden beads types, you know, like gratitude. But gratitude is really important.
But no, it's actually what you think, because your thoughts create a lot of your reality. The same way I said looking around the room. Mm-hmm. So if your mindset starts to become one more of, rather than you see someone, you're like, screw that guy, he's rich, right? That's how the mindset, that's easy for you to say they're rich. You see that in comments all the time.
Yep.
I'm like, I think that person worked their butt off to get to where they are.
Yeah.
And what did they do? And you know what? That's inspirational to me. What can I learn from that? And so that's just a mindset of, I don't see it as a zero sum game.
They're all very boring.
Right.
It's really interesting. You see like the expression of their dull mind. That's like, fuck them, they got money.
Right.
I don't have money. They got money. It's a dull brain. And I always wonder, like, what is it like to be that person? Is that a biological hitch? Or is it just learned behavior? Like, what is it that makes them that stupid?
I don't know if it's stupid. I don't know if I judge, but I think you project your insecurities.
It's a little bit of that, but it's clearly a stupid way to think.
Right.
You know, it's totally not empowering, like to complain about someone else's success or be angry about someone else's success is not empowering in any way, shape, or form. And so that's inherently stupid.
but you find the excuses. Because you're like, if I had that.
Yeah.
And rather than...
Must be nice.
Well, exactly, must be nice. Rather than saying, how do I do this for myself?
Exactly.
It's much easier, especially if you've given up on certain things.
Yeah.
Now, once you've given up, it's better to make excuses and bring someone else down to try to bring you up.
Well, here's what's dumb about it. And this is why I said it's stupid. It doesn't get any better when you think like that. Instead, if you can shift your focus and see someone doing something, recognize that these tinges of jealousy that you feel are completely natural.
Having recognized the natural feelings of jealousy that arise, the conversation shifts to a more nostalgic territory as we delve into the memories of first crushes and the stories they evoke.
Do you remember the name of the first girl you had a big crush on? And sometimes people don't remember. I just want you to know I've done this a lot.
Should I ask him that?
Not yet. I would do it on the phone.
Okay.
Yeah, screw it. Ask him that.
Okay. Do... Okay, hold on a second. I should have just did it with voice.
No, no, because then, well, yeah. Nobody's listening to this, I'm sure.
No, but I mean, it's quicker.
Don't tell me what he says.
Okay.
If he says no, a lot of people don't remember this question.
Okay.
So then I hedge and I go, well, who's the first girl you ever kissed? Let's see. But make sure there's absolutely no way I can see what's on your phone right now. Are we
you can't
clearly,
see.
Boom, get that tight.
You can't see, bitch.
Just okay. Get mad.
Okay.
Does he know or he doesn't know?
Yep.
He knows?
Yep, right
did
away.
Did he tell you?
Yep.
No shit.
Yep.
Ask him, is it the same as the first girl he ever kissed?
Okay.
See what he says.
Here we go. No.
Does he remember her name too?
Okay. Here we go. Yep.
It's 2 weeks ago, right? No, I'm kidding. Put away. You have two names in your head.
Okay.
Can we establish the fact that you have 50 people that have been on your show.
Yes.
That you took anybody.
Right.
If this person would have texted back, text somebody else. I don't care who it is.
Right.
There is no conceivable way. This isn't a bank that gave you a number.
Right.
And if he didn't know who it is, we would have done something different. I don't even care. Put the phone away.
Okay.
How am I going to do this?
How are you going to do
this? How am I going to do this? Right? And he said, what happens when it goes wrong? Nothing. I'm not getting paid to be here. I don't care.
You're freaking me out.
Think of both names. They're
Got
different.
It.
He had two different
yes.
people.
Yes.
The same way that you did 2020 and you didn't know, think of both names and I want you to juggle back and forth between the two, the
okay.
first kiss and the first crush.
Okay.
And is one name more interesting to you or like they're equal? Or is one name more interesting or not really?
Not really.
Not, okay,
no,
so you don't like, pretty... if you gravitate, I would have been like, go to one. Okay. Count the number of letters in the first crush, to yourself, don't use your fingers, I can see. Count the number of letters to yourself for the first crush.
I did that to psych you out.
Yeah.
I started doing those.
And then count the number of letters in the first kiss. Oh, you looked up. Interesting. They're not equal. Can you agree with me? They're not the same amount of letters, are they?
No, they're not.
No, see, because you would have had the same reaction. Do you know when you put somebody in a polygraph test? Have you ever been polygraphed?
No.
They can't just ask you the questions right away. They can't because they first have to get your benchmark. Same way blood doping, you got to test someone's blood against their blood. People
right.
have different amounts of testosterone naturally. So I had to see how you would do each one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you did the thing with the eyes to throw me off. The first crush, is that name shorter than the first kiss?
Yes.
Yeah. Go to the first crush. I'm going to go with that one. Less
okay.
work for me.
Okay.
One more time. Count the letters.
Okay.
And you were trying to avoid it. Six letters. Is that name six letters?
Yes.
Yeah. Mix up all the letters.
Okay.
In that first crush's name. Forget the first kiss.
Okay.
Scrap it.
Okay.
And pick any one.
Okay.
In your head. You got one?
Got it.
Jamie gave me a gift on a platter. Thought of a vowel. When he did that, it was 100% you wouldn't pick a vowel later. You didn't do a vowel in the name, did you?
No.
Dude, I'm here for a reason, right? I haven't done this. I've been doing this for a long time.
Right.
Told you. Goal is to be the best in the world at this.
Okay.
I have watched. I know everything you just did. Second letter. Do you think of the second letter?
I will.
Mmm. M. Amanda. Is the name Amanda?
Yes. What the fuck did you just
do? And you will talk about this for years.
Hold on a second. I'm texting him back. Can you figure out the second one?
No, I'm done, man. Come on. That's showbiz. You do your closer, you drop the mic, and you pick the mic back up? Never.
Do you want to know who it was?
No, I don't want to know.
My friend said, you're a witch. And he said, kill him now.
Definitely a comedian. Definitely a comedian after that. It's that. Definitely a comedian.
It might not be. Hang out with a lot of weird people.
Yeah. I don't know how to go back to conversation mode. Am I right? And I got pissed like a racehorse. Okay, what do I do?
Go pee.
Do I pee or no? Yeah. Do we keep going? Do we go strong?
With this?
No,
with
I'm just saying. We'll recalibrate.
We definitely can pee. It's always easier to pee.
Is that all right?
Yeah. No, it's perfect because you don't want to. It's too hard to form sentences when you have to pee.
Rapid fire. Are we back?
We're back.
Whew, lightning. I feel like
much better.
Brand
right?
new. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I know the feeling.
I was sitting on it.
You rehydrate.
And I drank so much Gatorade right before. And I was like, oh, party foul. Should have thought that went through.
27 miles. You deserve a little Gatorade. So, do you want to know who it was yet?
It's up to you. I like hanging thread, but it's up to you.
But what is the purpose of hanging the thread?
No, I can tell us at the end.
Can you tell me who it is?
I could, but come on.
What do you think it is?
No, I'll tell you at the end.
Okay.
You already gave the comedian. You said this.
I didn't say comedian.
No, it's
you
a comedian.
Comedian.
He's a witch. Kill him. 100%. 100%. That's not Ben Shapiro. You know what I'm saying?
Did you say witch?
Did he tell you?
No.
I took the quickest pee of my life. I raced over there.
No, I didn't tell him.
You didn't tell him?
No, I don't want him to know.
Curious. Do you think that there's people that knew this shit back in the days of witches? They figured out some of the powers, maybe not powers.
I think
like that
100% psychics of the past used a lot of the same techniques I'm using. Because when I watch psychics, and I have people always tell me at certain things, they tell me like, oh, you know, I saw a psychic do this and this and this, and I hear it and I go to myself, you know what, I could do that same trick and I could, no offense, do it better. But think about it. I'm doing this right now with an ethical compass versus if I go, oh, I'm getting this and I thought about this and this is what happened with your dad. And you're like, oh my God, you know, I'm like, well, it's only 25 grand more to have a private session. Let's talk to him a little bit more. Right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying there's nobody psychic. I'm telling you that a lot of the psychics, I'm watching them like, I know how you're doing that.
That was my other question.
Yeah.
It's going to be, have you caught anyone trying to get some stuff by you? Like, I don't know.
Like a psychic, you mean?
Not a psychic. You're buying a car and someone's trying to pull some trick and you're like, I know what you're about to do here.
100%. You know, not a shameless plug, but like I literally wrote a book, it's coming out in October, where it's all about, it's called Read Your Mind. And it's not me telling you how to be a mentalist, because 99.9% of people don't want to guess a first crush. It's not useful to you in your life. But what if you could read people more effectively to help you in your life, at home, at work, in relationships? That is a quantifiable thing that the tools of a mentalist, when not used for entertainment, but in life, day to day, are extraordinary.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you must be great at all kinds of things because of this.
I don't know about
anything that. Dealing with human beings.
Right, negotiating.
Yeah. Oh, I would imagine.
I've never sold a property at a loss. Let's just say that. It's been pretty good so far. You get in there, you're like, I won't take a dollar less. I'm like, I know you will. I know you will.
That's funny. What a weird skill to have.
Right?
What's a good book?
A good book?
To read on this.
Well, on becoming a mentalist?
Yes.
Or so,
in any of these skills. Like, what did you start with? Do you remember the book you started with?
Do you mean if you want to learn how to do
mentalism?
Do you
remember the book that you started with when you first started learning this stuff?
So the first book I started reading was a book called 13 Steps to Mentalism. But man, is it going to be tough for most people because it was written in the 1920s. So it's kind of like, you know, when it's like watching an old movie, no offense to old movies, but I'm like, oh, it's hard to get into this with my attention span now because it's antiquated. Some of it still applies, but you have to really do a big reach to know how do I apply this? Because back then there were no TVs or no phones.
Having navigated the challenges of mastering mentalism, the conversation shifts to the unpredictable world of live performances, where unexpected twists can turn a show into a memorable experience.
I will mention two or three things in the course of a show, and if it's 10 minutes, forget it. I don't want to be a salesperson up there. People tune out if they're like, what are you, selling me something right now?
Right.
And I had to say 8 or 9 things about the town of was it Charlotte? And they, at the last moment, we do dress rehearsal, go, by the way, we're all dressing as genies, and we're going to have a life-size genie lamp on stage. And it's going to start doing smoke while you're doing this. I'm like, I don't really like any of these things, but I was newer to showbiz. I'm like, I go with it. The whole time I'm on stage, the smoke is going like at 100%. We're coughing. It's going terrible. I can't see the person whose mind I'm reading. I'm sweating. I'm trying to talk about the Billy Graham Museum. I'm dying a slow death up there. I get two things in a row wrong. And you know, if you bomb your opener and your closer, like, you're dead.
Right.
You're I left apologizing. You never want to leave a stage. They somehow still loved it. I don't even know how. But I sweated through that suit. It was like, I you know when you question what you're doing in life?
Yeah.
That was like a, I'm like, maybe I'm not supposed to be doing this.
Well, also, you probably say, okay, never doing that kind of setup again.
Kind of, but me, I more catastrophize, and I'm like, yeah, I should just be done. But then I came back. I came back. I picked myself up. Funny enough, tomorrow's my one of my daughter's fifth birthday, and I'm doing a show at school for 5-year-olds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man. I got to get back. But sweetheart, this is like the sweet spot where they still think I'm cool.
That's cool.
Before I'm going to be like, don't do this and embarrass us, Dad.
Right.
And last year, for my oldest son, who was at the time had just turned 8, I did his school second graders, and dude, they ate me alive.
Really?
Because I'm not doing this. Like, this is, you know, my sweet spot is mentalism.
Right.
I had to brush off the dust in my kids' show, which I haven't touched in like 25 years. Thank God I'm not doing kids' shows anymore. No offense to kids' show magicians, but like that ship has sailed. And man, second graders are ruthless.
Really?
Ruthless.
Why second graders?
Because I don't know, man. Like one kid, I finish this show, okay? And during the show, my wife is in the room recording. I'm like, don't record. And I had to like look at my wife at one point, and I whispered, this is a nightmare. Because one kid's like, it's in your hand. Show me that. And I'm like, dude, shut up. And I'm not good at it. I haven't done it in a while.
Right.
So I'm just bombing on tricks. And thankfully, 95% of the crowd actually liked it. It was just these two kids who just got me. And when I went home, one of my neighbors saw me. And he goes to me, he goes, oh my God, what's wrong? Are you okay? Because my face was like ashen white. He thought somebody died. And I'm like, dude, I don't even know what to say right now. Like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. I had to at one point tell the teacher, I'm like, I actually do this for a living. I'm like, I had to try to flex. I'm like, I have an Emmy. Like, I wanted to let them know I'm not actually this bad. Like,
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Oh.
Do you think comedy is kind of a bit of hypnotizing people?
Oh, yeah. The best comedians, the pacing, the rhythm. Mm-hmm. Like, I was watching a Tom Segura special this morning. I don't know how well you know his material. I mean, you know him well. But, like, he had a bit about flying first class. Do you remember that one?
I don't.
Oh, he talks about, I don't think he's using his material anymore. The fact that he gets upgraded. He buys coach tickets. Mm-hmm. It was early. It was years ago. And he gets upgraded so much that he gets first class tickets. And he goes, should I not say this bit? I don't know if I want to take his bit.
It. Okay.
And he goes, it literally, the moment I get upgraded, this feeling of superiority washes over me.
Right.
Where I'm like, when people are walking, like, don't look at me, you poor piece of shit. Like, he's just so, he goes, I dare you, if you're in coach, to try to use my bathroom if I'm in the front. I will put my hand on your chest, bro. I've seen that 100 times, and it's just as funny, if not funnier, every time I watch it. And it's like the timing, the rhythm. Mm-hmm. I learned more from comedy than ever magic or mentalism. Way more.
Interesting. Because we've talked about it a bunch, comics. I'm like, I think we're hypnotizing people because I feel hypnotized when someone's killing. When someone's killing, I'm allowing them to think for me.
Yep.
You're like, they're taking me on a ride. And I'm not thinking at all about what would I say, what would I do. I'm just in their head or they're in my head.
Right. And also when you bring someone along and when you have that, like, just you drop just amazing line, like, just there's so many. I mean, listen, I consume so much comedy, but like, I love watching the rhythm, seeing where people go with it. The people that are more short form, like punch delivery,
mm-hmm.
right? Versus like a long form, like a Nate Bargatze, like watching Andrew do his things. Scholl's amazing. Man, some of these guys are just like, you can't see where the joke is going to come and how you just mm-hmm. squeeze every bit of juice out of the orange and the good callbacks.
I think the ultimate hypnotist is Dave Attell.
Yeah, oh yeah, Dave.
Dave, because Dave, there's a rhythm. There's a rhythm the way he does. It's like you just get lost in his thinking.
Right.
And he just takes you on the and he's so effortless. And he does so many sets. Like, he's so polished that there's like this effortlessness to his movements and the rhythm and everything. It's like, it's wild.
Oh, like Sebastian Maniscalco. Mm-hmm. I just freaking love watching Sebastian. There's so many people that came up now that I've seen like over and over and over and just watched them go up. Like Sam Morril, I've been a fan of for
Sebastian
years.
Sebastian was actually the first guy to recommend you to me.
I love Sebastian. I love you, Sebastian.
Yeah.
Was there anyone else after that?
Caught up a couple of people told me you were awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, quite a few.
Now, Sebastian's such a stand-up guy.
This friend of mine, when I told him that
Shane
it was-
Shane Gillis. It's Shane Gillis, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. You just thought of it. You shouldn't have let down your guard. I just knew it.
How'd you know?
That was it. That was the moment.
What did you see?
I can't tell you, but that was right when you said this friend of mine. I knew you were going to protect your parks, and I said, could it have been Ari? Could have been Mark? And I immediately knew it was going to be Shane Gillis, because neither of those two would have said, definitely not Mark, would have said, kill him. He's a witch. I just knew it.
Yep, that's Shane. That's such his sense of humor too. He's a witch, kill him.
Yeah, that's so Shane. That's so Shane.
It's someone that
you said
I know.
100%. So now I'm thinking like he must live in Austin. Like there was a lot of indicators.
Mm, yeah.
Whatever.
But that's part of the thing, right? But that's also you admitting that this isn't like supernatural.
I'm not psychic. So everybody, when people put me on the spot and like tell me this right now, I literally go, it's not Netflix, it's an on-demand feature. Like again, that's where these skills, when people are like, why don't you win the lottery? Why don't you, all these things that are silly where you don't get what I do, apparently.
Do you believe that there is any sort of psychic power that people have? Like when someone gets a phone call from someone they're just thinking about?
Intuition.
Right.
I think, listen, that's like a bigger picture question. Like, where does your mind expand? Like psychedelics, like what is there beyond this plane
right.
that clearly, people are aware of? It'd be silly to think, but how do you kind of get on that frequency? There's no question that people have an intuition. Again, could I call it psychic powers? I've had things happen that I can't explain to you based on the skills I have.
Having delved into the complexities of intuition and psychic phenomena, the conversation shifts to the intriguing dynamics of human interactions, where unexpected connections and unique questions redefine our understanding of relationships.
Totally.
Right? Because he's got you.
Right.
Like this, you have the spectrum of possibilities in terms of like the humans that you meet. And then you meet one that's outside of that. You're like, ooh, I hadn't even considered you before.
Right.
Who the fuck are you?
that was pretty much the question. And then he had he was interesting because I don't know if you get this, but I get the 20 questions is what I call it, air quotes, which is, how'd you get into this? Like the opening questions, which you can't blame someone. If you got a weird job, people want to know about it, right? Did somebody in your family do this? Like there's all these questions you're going to get every time. God bless people. I don't hold it against them. Mine is always, I'm doing like a sound check for a gig. Mm-hmm. And then there was like, all right, so we got this. And I go, don't you know that we have that? I'm like, ah. I'm like, okay, so just real quick, where's the green room? Like, you don't know already? And I'm like, okay,
this is getting silly.
I just smile and I'm like, I never heard that one before, but it's you get that.
Yeah.
But in this situation, again, it's like he didn't ask those questions. Mm. He was very uniquely finding questions that weren't like the usual.
Of course, because it's a study. I mean, he studies humans.
Right.
I mean, to be a great filmmaker the way he is, to do Schindler's List,
That's such a heavy movie, man. Have you seen that recently?
Private Ryan.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got heavy movies. And then, Close Encounters is one of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, it's interesting. One of the things I really liked about that movie is he, after he became a father, changed how he felt about the ending of his own movie. He wouldn't have the father leave everybody.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because at the end of the movie, Richard Dreyfuss's character gets on the spaceship and leaves with the aliens.
Wow.
He's like, I would never do that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did they film it or no?
Well, it was after the fact. He made the movie, I believe, when he was younger and he didn't have children. And then as time went on, he looked back on it. You're like, oh, God, I would never leave my kids to go on this fucking UFO.
Right.
Nor would I, nor would you.
No.
No. But in this idealistic version of who he thought the Richard Dreyfuss character was and the circumstances, he had to leave. He had to go. You got to go with the aliens.
I sure as hell get my phone out and try and get good footage for a change. I'm like, right here, good stuff. I like the tic-tac and gimbal, but I want to see it close up and high def.
I know.
You got anything?
Off-air.
You got something? Come on.
I have off-air what I think are people bullshitting me.
Oh, you don't have to be off-air. I've watched these. I can read people. I can tell.
On-air,
where the snake oil is.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah, I feel it. That's where it's instinctive. I don't have the tools that you have, but there's a part of me that's like, something smells.
Something feels weird. When I walked in here and I said, this is, again, passes the sniff test. And pardon my French, but everyone takes a crap, right? Everyone in the world. I don't care if you're the Pope. You take a crap. So if they're being held in a facility, someone's taking craps.
Right.
And who's cleaning it? I don't think the scientists are. There's a janitor. There's right. someone in that room. So are you telling me that there's nobody in there that's got a 401k, health insurance, some sort of, how is someone not getting, tell me, explain to me what NDA they're signing or what they're doing, that if they found this out, someone loose lips sink ship, somebody would have told somebody who works in that facility, who's not the scientist, who's not the military person, and word gets out. How is that buttoned up tight where nothing gets out ever?
Well,
for 50 years, you're telling me there's a basement somewhere in this country, eight stories down, where they've got those things and no one else knows who's credible and can release it? How? Occam's razor. What do you think?
I think the government can keep things secret for a long time. I think they did with the Manhattan Project. I think they've done it with other projects in the past. I think it's possible.
You think it's siloed? Because, it's just siloed. Yeah, nobody knows all the info.
Because people do talk. There's a lot of people talking. And people share similar stories. And they have for decades. And I think there's something to it. I just don't know what it is. I think, you know, we had Jesse Michaels on yesterday, who has this amazing show on YouTube, probably the best YouTube show on aliens and UFOs and UAPs. And he's very agnostic in his thinking, and he's very objective. And he also is very, very, very thorough as far as his understanding of the information. And even he is baffled. As much as he knows, but he knows more about siloed technology than pretty much anybody does in regard to this UAP phenomenon.
Right.
And he points to this guy, Thompson Brown, who was working on gravity technology in the 1950s. They had working models. Like he thinks that they have some sort of a gravity propulsion device. But then there's things like Roswell, where the crash, like if all those stories are true, that's too early. It's 47. There's too early. There's no way they had working models of these devices back then. So he thinks it's possible. You know, he's not a, I know this is true. He thinks it's possible that it is both United States government secret projects that people are seeing, and there's probably quite a few of them. We actually pulled a few of them up and showed some of them that look like UFOs that probably is part of what people are seeing. But he thinks is also probable that there's some other things, and these other things could be from anywhere. And then there's just the Fermi paradox. Like, if they're all out there, where are they? There's so many planets. There's so many galaxies.
Well, that's got to be the case.
It has to be the case. It's the question of whether or not they have visited or whether or not they're here.
Right.
You know, and then there's these like weird Peruvian mummies that we went over, that these tridactyl mummies that they take CAT scans of, and you see the tissue and the bones, and, you know, they were all found in, what is it called? What's the kind of earth that they found that these things are? The dye something. Do you remember what it is? Where they were all dried out?
I know exactly the description, but I don't remember the word.
Something earth. I know the word. I can't. It's escaping me right now. All that stuff's very fascinating.
So fascinating.
Ancient depictions on cave walls of these things. And we pulled up these tapestries that are 1,000 years old that had these three-fingered creatures. Very weird. Very weird. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're alien.
Right.
You know, We talked about all the various versions of human beings that they're finding now, you know, from Denisovans to the Island of Flores, Hobbit people. There's a weird variety of humans that went extinct.
Right.
And these tridactyl things could very well have been that.
Yeah, it was Christopher Mellon on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was my favorite one.
Yeah.
Because he had, I don't want to butcher it, but I think he called it ultra-terrestrial. It makes the most sense, which is, think about right now if you just dropped a bottle in the ocean, mm-hmm. right? What are the odds you ever run into that bottle in the ocean? It's impossible. That's what time is. If we've been around for 13 billion years, sure, there's aliens, but we've only been around for a few thousand. Like, it's such an infant, it's a grain of sand in the whole beach.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you do right now if we had technology 1,000 years from now, 2,000 years from now, right? AI, multiply it out, the whole nine. What would you do? You'd send these things everywhere.
Sure.
Just like sci-fi, and you'd plant them, and you'd come out every now and again and check what's up.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram, and visit our website, podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info@podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening,